Israel is now celebrating its 66th birthday. And welcome back to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Bill Federer, best-selling author and speaker. And Bill compiles something called American Minute, AmericanMinute.com. You can find out every day what happened of significance on this particular day. This recording is right now being made for May 14th, or actually May 15th, but I understand, Bill, that May 14th, 1948, is when Israel as a new modern country was reborn.
Yeah, it's a fascinating history, Jerry, and it was in 70 AD on September 8th that Israel, the Jerusalem, was destroyed, and the Jews were scattered around the world. Titus was the Roman emperor. He starved the city for months. At the end of July of 70 AD, he broke through the walls, and the historian Josephus says that he killed over a million Jews in the conquest. And the temple was torn down on the 9th of Av, and there was no...
What would the 9th of Av be in our terms? Do you know?
That would be the 9th of September.
Oh, okay.
And So the Jews were scattered around the world. The Romans took and massacred them in celebrations, right? So different word for celebration, but they would have these festivals where they would feed people to the lions, and they just massacred untold numbers of Jews. But Israel did not have a nation of its own until 1948. And in one of the miracles of modern times is that after being scattered around the world, that a nation came back and resurrected its old language, which is unprecedented, that has never happened before. But it was midnight, May 14th, 1948, the State of Israel came into being. A little background here. World War One, the British were fighting the Germans, Kaiser Wilhelm, and the British needed help making explosives. And so there was a Jewish chemist that came from Russia named Chaim Weizmann. And he came up with a way of synthesizing acetone, which was needed in the explosives. And this revolutionized their war effort. And the British were able to win with American help. And after the war, they were going to reward this chemist, Chaim Weizmann. And he said, no, I would rather have a homeland for my people. And this was what's called the Zionist movement, which incidentally started with Christians in America talking about, they call them millennialists, but they talked about the return of Christ. And some Christian preachers began to go around the country and the world visiting synagogues, telling them that they need to get back. And one of the very first Zionists that was a Christian was Henri Dunant, the founder of the Red Cross.
Oh, yeah.
So here he is in Switzerland, and he attended the first Zionist Congress there in Switzerland with Theodor Herzl. But the founder of the Red Cross was there, and he was a Christian Zionist. He was a Christian in favor of the Jews returning to their promised land. And so there was this movement, and there was a leader in England named Balfour, and he decided to go ahead and give the Jews the land, because the British had taken, when the Ottoman Empire fell apart, the British took control, called the Mandate, sort of like America got the Philippines and Puerto Rico and so forth in a quote-unquote mandate. Well, after the Ottoman Empire fell, the British got all of the area of the Middle East, and so they gave to Israel the land from the Mediterranean Sea all the way to Iraq, from Syria down to Egypt. It was huge. And then,
what do you mean they
enough,
gave to Israel? What do you mean they gave
to
Israel?
Well, they issued the Balfour Declaration.
They being the British.
Right, which set aside this land,
right,
which was underneath of the British control as a mandate, to set it aside for Jewish settlement. And ironically enough, there was a secular Jew that was not a Zionist, and he was ambassador to India, and he looked down his nose on Chaim Weizmann, thought he was, you know, one of these Russian squatters that came over to England and so forth, and he actually talked British into cutting the land in half and giving half of it to create a Palestinian state called Transjordan, or on the other side of the Jordan River.
Huh.
And so they literally cut the land from the Balfour Declaration in half to create this Palestinian state, which was today called Jordan. But then we see that in 1967, matter of fact, the day after Israel was a nation,
1948,
all the surrounding countries, the Arab League, which included Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, Transjordan, they attacked. And against all odds, Israel survived.
Yes.
And an armistice was declared. It was negotiated by Ralph Bunche. He was the first African-American to receive the Nobel Peace Prize, but he was the U.S. Ambassador to help negotiate the birth of Israel. Harry S. Truman is our Democrat president, and he writes to Chaim Weizmann. He said, "I want to tell you how happy and impressed I have been at the remarkable progress of the new state of Israel." And Harry S. Truman, Democrat president, goes on saying, "I remember well our conversations about the Negev, and I deplore any attempt to take it away from Israel. I had thought that my position would have been clear to all the world, particularly in light of the specific wording of the Democrat Party platform." Sort of interesting that just this last
presidential
election,
that
the Democrat Party wanted to eliminate that from their platform.
Yeah, they were voting on two things. One was, should we mention God in the platform? And also, should they recognize, you know, some aspect of Israel? And the people, for the most part, booed. I wish, though, they had only been one issue or the other, so the whole world would have a better, more clear idea. Well, they rejected both. Let's put it that way. Oh, and then the speaker who was taking the vote said, "Oh, I hear it. You know, all the yeas have it." You know, even though it was like it was overwhelmingly booed. That guy needs new hearing. But anyway, go back to Israel. I'm sorry.
So then in 1967 is when Israel is attacked again. And miraculously, they fight back and not just drive out the enemy, but they get control of the Sinai Peninsula.
And Jerusalem.
That little wedge-shaped piece of real estate that is between Israel and Egypt. And Israel now controls it. But the international community tells Israel, "Land for peace. If you give up the Sinai Peninsula, we as the international community will guarantee you'll have peace." Well, guess what? They gave land and they didn't get peace. And then another ambassador comes along and says, "We'll give up land for peace." And they give up land, they don't get peace. And then Condoleezza Rice twists their arm to give up the Gaza Strip, saying, "Land for peace." Well, they give up the land, they don't get peace. And we're beginning to see that in the Islamic world, the definition of peace is when the whole world submits to the will of Allah, there will be peace. In other words, to them, mm-hmm. peace is world Islam. And it's like, gee, all this time we've been using the wrong definition for the same word.
All right, now we're talking with Bill Federer, and we're talking about the rebirth of Israel as a modern nation. Let me ask you a question. Going back to 1948, or even earlier, as Jews began to settle in Israel, and they were starting to get that land back, wasn't a lot of it desert and not really occupied necessarily? Maybe a few cities here or there, or a few towns here or there, but it wasn't as if it was this big thriving thing and then the Jews just took over and, you know, "Hey, you Palestinians, get out of here." Or what was it like?
Right. Mark Twain visited Israel in the Palestine area in 1867. And Mark Twain talked about it being a pile of rocks, that
wow.
there wasn't anything growing there.
1867.
In 1867. Yeah. Matter of fact, this is what he described about Jerusalem. He goes, "Rags, wretchedness, poverty, and dirt, those signs and symbols of that indicate the presence of Muslim rule." He talks about how a short distance away in Mount Hermon, he says that the Muslims killed 5,000 Christians, were massacred in Damascus in 1861 by the Turks. Narrow streets ran blood for several days. Oh. Men, women, and children were butchered indiscriminately and left to rot by the hundreds all through the Christian quarter. The stench was dreadful. Mark Twain continues writing, "All the Christians who could get away fled the city. But now Mohammedans would not defile their hands by burying the infidel dogs. And the Muslims chased them to Mount Hermon and to anti-Lebanon, or the land across from Lebanon. Mm. And in a short time, 25,000 more Christians were massacred.
Oh, man.
And Mark Twain obviously was a very famous writer here in America, but this was what is, he wrote a book called Innocents Abroad. And this was his first major literary work, and he talks about that. So it was a pile of rocks, and it was not until Israel, the Turks that controlled the area, taxed the land based on the number of trees. Because it was arid, trees were valuable, and so they taxed it on the trees. And what did the people do that didn't want to pay the taxes?
Chop
you got it.
Down.
They cut down the trees.
Wow.
So they had even fewer trees. And so by the time the Ottoman Turks got done with it, it was just a barren wasteland. And so when Israel began to go over there with the Zionist movement, with the Balfour Declaration.
Yes.
And then finally in 1948, they
with recognition.
Made it blossom like a rose.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. Doesn't Israel actually produce so many fruits and vegetables and so forth that they feed a lot of Europe and so forth? Coming out of that small little country, and yet there was nothing before the Israelites, you know, came back to their land. Now, you mentioned the battle in 1948. Obviously, the Jews succeeded against all odds. The same thing happened in 1967. Why don't you mention 1973? I think that was the last major, major conflict. And then obviously there have been many minor skirmishes since.
Well, right. That was another one that Israel had the whole Arab world against them. 250 million people.
Wow.
And there's only some 6 million Jews there in Israel. There's actually more Jews in New York than there are in Israel.
Mm.
But they survived. And you talk to people that fought in those battles, and they'll tell miraculous stories of, you know, Syrian tanks coming in and hornets coming out of nowhere, going into the holes, you know, where they look out for the tank and start biting and stinging everybody in there. And they just jump out of their tanks and run away.
Wow.
But it's interesting, if you look at a correlation between America's attitude toward Israel and America being blessed.
And by the way, we have 3 minutes left.
And so you had Uriah P. Levy was the first admiral who was Jewish, and he was in the U.S. Navy. He stopped flogging. That was a practice in the Navy, and he stopped that. Matter of fact, Uriah P. Levy bought Thomas Jefferson's Monticello mansion when it was in bankruptcy, and he rebuilt it, refurbished it, and then opened it to the public. And Uriah P. Levy actually had paid for a statue of Jefferson, and it was put in the U.S. Capitol. It's the only privately commissioned statue in the U.S. Capitol. And it was this Jewish admiral, Uriah P. Levy. But through history, when America was favorable toward Israel, we were blessed. Woodrow Wilson let a lot of Jews come over here when they were chased out of Russia. And presidents would write letters to the czar. And it's interesting, when under Bush, the elder, is when America began to turn and not support Israel as much. Mm. But under Bush the younger is when Condoleezza Rice forced them to vacate the Gaza Strip. Now, this is a little interesting trivia, and some think it might actually be the providential, but the last Jewish residents were chased out of Gaza on August 22nd, 2005. The very next day, a tropical depression in the Atlantic was given the name Katrina, and it headed for New Orleans, where tens of thousands had to evacuate and had property damage of $81 billion. And so, you know, sort of a coincidence here. We forced them out of their land, and we have a tragedy. But there's different writers that have cataloged these occurrences, and with our current president saying that Israel is not getting our support like it used to, there's concern as whether or not we'll continue to be blessed with the Abraham's blessing, that he'll bless those that bless them and curse those that curse Israel. So,
yeah, and the Secretary of State obviously made a lot of enemies by saying that Israel is going to become like an apartheid state if they continue without a two-state solution. We only have about 45 seconds left. What do you want to say in closing about the modern state of Israel?
Well, it just that it is totally unique in world history for a people that went out of existence as far as their nation to being reassembled and reassembling their language and being the same exact land. It started after World War II and the millions of Jews that were killed in Europe.
20 seconds to go.
Franklin Roosevelt met with the King of Saudi Arabia and said that he would not recognize Israel. A week later, FDR's dead.
Whoa.
Harry S. Truman becomes the president.
And he
one
did.
One of the first things Truman does is recognize Israel.
All right, Bill Federer, thank you so much for all your research and work and books. AmericanMinute.com. God bless you.
Thank you.